guys, and welcome to episode 5 of Tempo's Lane, a podcast where we talk about League of Legends, esports, and the power of performance psychology. I'm super excited for today's episode. I had the opportunity to interview Tyler Oling. He's been a coach for quite a few different esports organizations. He's been a strategic coach, a drafting coach, and former head coach, and he's currently running the esports program at Weber State University in Utah. He's also coaching their League of Legends team. He has a lot of really interesting thoughts on the game, and he's been a part of this industry for so long, so I really enjoyed my time with him. Tyler, thank you. If you guys are interested in learning more about Tyler, or you want to use him for coaching, or go and watch his Twitch or follow him on Twitter, I'm going to be linking it all in the bottom of the description of the episode. So go and check Tyler out. I really appreciate him putting time aside to, you know, answer some of my questions. So with that, guys, I'm super excited, and let's jump into it. All right, Tyler, how you doing?
Doing good. How are you?
I'm doing good. I wanted to give you a couple minutes just to kind of explain, like, where you're from, what you do, and who you are.
Okay. Are you talking like relative to esports? Or yeah. Just like my whole life?
you could do relative to esports, and then maybe just like a little bit of the background of your life too.
Okay. So I'm originally from Nebraska. I kind of grew up playing games my whole life. I actually played the card game Yu-Gi-Oh! Like semi-professionally, I guess you could call it. Like if you look me up, I have some like decks I topped with and stuff like at events.
Really?
Yeah. And so I've kind of like been really into games my whole life. And basically when I graduated high school, I went to a college and I didn't really know much about it. Like I was like a like semi-religious individual when I went to college. Mm-hmm. And so I went to like a college that was like hyper-religious, like almost like, like over the top, right? Yeah. So when I got there, they had like this rule that you couldn't bring consoles for your first semester for some reason.
What?
Yeah, I don't know. It was really weird. Like I didn't even know about that like going in. I was like, oh, okay, I guess I can't do this then. So when I got there, like everyone in the dorms, like we didn't know what to do. Like we were all bored, right? So we decided like, well, we all have laptops, like we can play League. Like we had just kind of like started, like I had just heard about it. I was like, why don't we give this a shot, you know?
Yeah.
So I started playing League there. And then I basically left that school after my first semester, kind of stopped doing the whole college thing for a while. And then I went to, I like just started working full time, and I worked with the mentally handicapped for like 5 years, right? Okay. So during that time I was doing overnights, and basically the guys I worked with, they would typically sleep through the whole night, and my manager kind of told me, as long as you're awake, don't really care what you do. So I spent most of my time just playing League of Legends, like 10 of my 12-hour shift.
That
right?
Sounds like an awesome job.
It was pretty sick.
So what season did you start playing in?
Like end of season 3, early season 4. It's like when Jace was released.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, so I've played like a ton, and there was like Extra Life. I don't know if you're familiar. They're like a charity event.
Okay.
There's like a LAN center in Nebraska that had like League of Legends tournaments every year for Extra Life. And so surprisingly, like you wouldn't think like Nebraska would have a scene.
Yeah. But like so random.
We had like 20 teams that would show up regularly to these tournaments.
Holy cow.
Yeah, it was crazy. And so like me and my like buddies, we threw a team together. We called it Oven Pizza GG. the reason behind that is whenever we play together, one of us would be making a pizza and then we'd have to AFK to go get it out of the oven, yeah, which like would then cause us to probably lose, right? So so that's that we, you know, inspired the name Oven Pizza GG. But we were a bunch of like ragtag group of silver players. We kind of came together and we were like, we're not better than most of the people here, so we're gonna like try like a 2v1 lane swap, which was like a standard back
yeah,
then.
Yeah.
And like but like no one at a local tournament was gonna do it, so we tried to like cheese it and do it, and we ended up getting third in our first tournament.
No
which
way.
Was like Yeah, which was crazy. Like, there was, like, way better players there. But we were like, okay, not bad. You know, we were pretty down for it.
What champs were you using in the solo lane?
We would pick, like, champions like Lulu top or something that would go 1v2 bot.
Yeah.
Because, like, we figured if, like, that's going to be useful no matter what. And our best player was, like, he was gold. And he was, like, our ADC.
Yeah.
And so we put him on Vayne. And basically, like, we were winning up until team started banning Vayne. Like, once they caught on to what we were doing, right? So, like, our strategy, like, it was so linear. We only had one thing we could do. And we did it up until we ran out of hyper carries our ADC could play. Because they just started banning him out. And that's how we got third, right? But either way, a smooth run for a bunch of randoms, right?
Yeah. Like, I love hearing these stories of, like, these early tournaments, you know? Because people had the craziest strategies. And it was just, like, there was no limit to, like, what you could and couldn't do, you know?
Oh, absolutely. And, like, I mean, that part of it's just, like I think my card game background kind of really developed my abilities to, like, come up with strategies as a player to think of, like, okay, like, even if I'm not better than my opponent, like, how can I win? You know what I'm saying? You don't have to necessarily be better to win always, right? I kind of did that. And then, like, as I progressed through the years, like, since I started playing, like, full time all the time, basically at my job, I got a lot better. Like, I started one tricking Evelynn jungle. I, like, hit D4 and I was, like, pretty, like, good at Evelynn, but pretty bad at the game still, right? But either way, I started, like, doing those tournaments more frequently. And then as I started playing, like, I started, like, kind of building teams that were a little bit higher elo. And we started, like, actually winning them, which was, like, pretty fun. So, like, it started, like, becoming, like, a consistent thing where we were, like, winning. And eventually, like, there's, like, a small org in Omaha that picked me up to build a team for them. And I guess, like, one cool story about that is, like, we threw together, like, I built a team of people that I knew and played with from Omaha. And I, at this point, I was getting, like, pretty good, right? Like, I knew I was pretty confident in my own play. And my teammates, like, they're telling me, like, I shouldn't be playing, like, Evelynn in our games, which I was a one trick. So I was like, what? And then, like, they also, like, I don't know. They basically kind of came out and were like, hey, I think we just disagree fundamentally on how the game should be played, right? So the team that I built, like, kicked me off that team, like, a week before the org I was a part of, like, was hosting one of those tournaments, right?
Yeah.
So I got into, like, the UNL Discord, and I looked up, like, any players in Lincoln that weren't already participating in these tournaments, and I threw together a ragtag team of random people we had, like, never played together before.
Yeah.
And we entered the tournament the next week, and we just kind of blindly trusted each other. We just, like, played confidently, and we ended up beating my former team in the finals. Gosh. Of that tournament. And it was, like, the most satisfying win I've ever had in my life.
That was so awesome.
But yeah, so that kind of converted into eventually I got, like, an offer from, like, Midland University to go play support for their team. And that's when I kind of started considering going back to college, because I, like, kind of wanted to get away from what I was doing. I felt like I was at my ceiling with working with a mentally handicapped. So I thought, like, maybe there was room for, like, an actual legitimate career in esports, which I had never really considered before, you know? So I decided to go back to school. I played at Midland for a year. We did pretty well, but our team was, like, half of us were diamond, half of us were gold. So, like, I didn't really want to try to sit through the growing pains of trying to get everybody up to the same pace.
Yeah.
So I decided to, like, leave. And I went to, I transferred to a school in Kansas called Kansas Westland. And basically, I went there because the director, the coordinator of esports there, his name was Gid Sasser. And he's, like, he was incredible. Like, I learned a lot about, like, esports and everything from that guy, right? But when I got there, it wasn't too long till he kind of, like, called us into a meeting. And he's like, guys, this school is not going to support esports. He's like, if you have any aspirations for it, I suggest you leave. And so our whole team followed him to the next school, which was Catawba College in North Carolina.
Okay.
And that's where I kind of started, like, developing myself as, like, a player and a coach.
Yeah.
Right. So I kind of took an interest. Obviously, like, I was, like, pretty heavy into competitive esports at the time, like, at least on the collegiate level. I also was pretty confident in my ability to draft. I kind of held like a leadership role in every team I was a part of.
Okay.
So I joined Full Spectrum. I got like connected to them, which was like a full challenger team. My first tournament was the Tyler 1 Championship Series.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I kind of like helped the team draft in there. I wasn't necessarily coaching. I was mostly just drafting for the teams.
Mm-hmm.
And then it wasn't like after a while of doing that, I kind of realized like I kind of want to get into the coaching side of things. So we transferred to Simplicity, which Gid was the general manager of. So he kind of like took our team from Full Spectrum to Simplicity. And then I started doing some form of like assistant coaching while I was doing that. I started learning more about coaching. And then I lastly ended up like working for Flamengo, which is the CB LOL team. I was doing drafts for them and like helping them as like a draft coach. And at the same time, I also got assigned to be the head coach of Revival, which was like a challenger amateur team.
Yeah.
And like basically the org had very little budget. They were really great guys. I loved working with them, but we had like pretty minimal resources and we like, we did considerably well, all things considered. Like I think we got second place in big league. We qualified for Proving Grounds, like, or for the tier ones events or whatever to qualify for Proving Grounds.
Yeah.
And that was pretty like a pretty cool experience. And then basically towards the end of that, I basically started like looking for, I was like graduating college. So I started looking for jobs and that's kind of how I ended up at Weber. I actually applied, I Google searched esport jobs in and I wrote the state down and I applied in literally every state that was hiring.
Really?
And I like I had never been to Utah or anything prior. I was just like, we'll see where I go. You know, I just want to find like the best fit for me. And I had a lot of interviews. Like I interviewed with a lot of people because I mean I have a pretty decent background in esports at that point.
Yeah.
But a lot of schools are like kind of confused, I guess. Mm-hmm. Like they can't really tell the difference between what experience and inexperience is in esports. Like. You could like show up and obviously I've worked in like a professional scene. And then like, there's some guy who's like, yeah, I'm a psychology major and I have played Mario before. And like the school can't tell the difference, right? Like they really can't. Yeah. So, but yeah, so I ended up at Weber and I'm pretty happy here. It's a really great school.
Yeah. Weber's awesome, man. And the campus is beautiful too. The whole area, like right on the mountain is awesome.
Yeah, well, and especially, like, because every school I applied, 90% of the schools I applied to were, like, random, like, private colleges in the middle of nowhere, and I was like, I don't want to move to a place where there's, like, a single gas station and a Walmart, and that's going to be my life, you know? So, like, when I found out, like, I could go to, like, a city in the mountains, I was like, oh, I was so relieved, you know?
Yeah, because what, you're only, like, 30 minutes from Salt Lake City, right?
Yeah, it's like 30 minutes from Salt Lake City. I mean, Ogden itself is like a pretty nice city. Like, I don't have any gripes living here. Like, it's been a really nice and smooth transition compared to like a lot of the other options I had prior to Weber.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm pretty happy about it. But that's a pretty long-winded response.
No, that's perfect. So, what is Weber like? What is their program like? Is an actual esports like program? Do they run it like an organization, or do they run it more like a college like team?
So, it's initially started as like a club. It was a pretty active club. We have like 650 people in our Discord.
Nice.
So like. It was a really active club, and basically they kind of bought like a computer lab, so like a pseudo arena that they wanted to give for the esports students. And then they were supposed to hire a director 2 years ago, but then COVID hit. So everything went on hold, right? Which is lucky for me, I guess, to an extent, because they would have hired someone and I wouldn't have had the opportunity to come here.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it got prolonged, and then they hired me basically to try to transition it from a club to an actual program. So it's not, we're not quite there yet. We're like, basically like as far as funding goes, we're really limited on funds, which is really sad because like I can do a lot with a little, right? Mm-hmm. But yeah, so like we're just kind of starting to establish funds. I'm basically in charge of finding all the funds, whether it's like through like things on campus like student fee committees and stuff like that, or like through finding like sponsors. So if you know anyone who really wants to sponsor an esport team, though, let me know, because I would love to get that sponsorship. But yeah, so like it's like almost a program. Like, we don't have like scholarships yet. Like, we're working on the budget, but it's something that like I'm looking to do in the future, or as soon as possible, really, because I want this to be like one of the greatest like esport programs in the country. Like, I don't like to settle for like anything less than like what is the best to my standards. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So I really want to like grow it to something huge.
What would you say right now is the best like college esports, like, I guess, system that's in the States?
So like, I'd say like one of the most well-known and like one of the most successful schools has been Maryville.
Okay.
They like, I mean, they ended up getting some of their players sent straight from collegiate to pro. No other school has done that. Not that it like lasted. I don't know if it was like completely thought out, like all the way, but like, it, you know, at the very least, like that puts a huge brand behind their name that like is very hard to compete with. So I'd say like Maryville is definitely like the most popular, and probably the most successful so far.
Okay, cool. It makes me wonder, like, the difference between successful and unsuccessful. Does it all come back to like funding and being able to put yourself out there and like create content? Or is it more of just like getting authorization for the school to do specific things?
So it, like, every school's different, right? Every school has their own issues. But like the biggest thing that I think, like, one of the hardest part is like typically the people who are in charge of making decisions for the school, they are typically older. Some of them don't understand or even think esports is a real thing. Yeah, exactly. And like, so that kind of can cause some issues for you if you're trying to, I guess, grow and develop your program. Because in reality, like, what colleges need to see esports as is it's an investment. And it's a long-term investment. It's not something you're going to, like, get a ton of money back right away.
Yeah.
Right? But it's one of those things where, like, if you check the viewership, like, esports has, like, exceeded most traditional sports in viewership. Right? Yeah, so, like, there's clearly a structure that can work at the collegiate level. But part of that requires the schools to believe that it's a real thing. And, like, heavily invest in it, just like they did with traditional sports. Because if it's like a more marketable thing, then like I think the viewership goes up, and that also increases like the potential revenue of a school. So like that's like one of the biggest issues, and like it's hard to say, like for me, like I'm limited by the fact that like Weber is a state institution. So like, it's not like, like with private colleges, they can kind of just dump their money in whatever they choose. Where like at a state institution, there's like more bureaucracy that goes into what you can and can't do and like where funding goes. So it's a little bit more challenging, which like isn't that good. But the nice thing about it is it's like really cheap, or really cheap tuition, which means if I can get anything going, it makes it really easy to support, because scholarships make the school extremely affordable for students to like attend, right?
Yeah, that makes sense. Interesting. Okay, cool. What was the like decision that made you want to transition from being a player to a coach?
I think, like I said, like a lot of it was I peaked like high diamond, like diamond two was like the highest elo I peaked. I didn't necessarily feel like I was like, I like grinded a lot, you know, obviously I was playing like 10 hours a day or whatever, like a lot of the time.
Yeah.
And like, I just kind of felt like I probably am not going to become a pro player, but I also know that I have like a ton of experience in competitive, like in competitive League of Legends, right? Like as a player, but also like, I knew that like, one thing that I guess like when it comes to like drafting in League of Legends, right, I think it's very similar to deck building in card games. And obviously I had a lot of success playing like Yu-Gi-Oh, and I got like, I had decks that like were unique to me, or like combos that I created that like popped off on YouTube and stuff like that, right? That like kind of made me feel like I could, I guess, go the direction of like a coach or staff role, and I would be better off. Yeah. Also in terms of like career, like trying to get into being like a pro player is really hard. Like, there are a ton of phenomenal players I know that like won't get an academy offer or anything, and it's like really sad because there's so many great players out there that just like don't get any attention at all.
So that being said, do you think there are any like current new players in academy or the LCS that are like standing out to you this season?
I mean, one of my former players that I worked with before Concept, he hit he got it onto Immortals Academy, which was really cool.
Okay, cool.
I think Danny, like, on EG, he, like, jumped up. Danny and JoJo, I guess. Like, JoJo I knew was going to be insane because, like, I saw him in Amateur. He literally went from, like, a single split from Amateur to Academy and then went from straight from Academy all the way to Pro. And Danny, like, my team competed against when he was on EG Prodigies. So I thought he was, like, pretty good. But I didn't, like, have a ton of high expectations for him. But now he's, like, basically, like, an LCS superstar. You know what I'm saying? So, like, that's, like, pretty incredible. And I also think that speaks lengths to what giving a player an opportunity does, right? Like, you could sign, like, Wild Turtle for the 20th time. Or maybe you could, like, give someone, like, Scooped or Value a shot. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah. I mean, it's the same thing with JoJo. Like, you can either sign Jizuke again for another season or give the rookie a chance.
Yeah. And JoJo's definitely been performing at his role, which, like I said, like, the mid laner I, like, worked with on Revival, he told me, he's like, JoJo, out of, like, everyone in NA, he's, like, one of the most difficult opponents I have to lane against, right? Like, he's like, that guy is insane. And so, like, I was pretty confident, like, that if that was the case, he was going to go far, and he did.
Yeah, I know you haven't listened to any of the previous episodes, but I'm a big EG fan. And so the new, like, addition of JoJo and Danny has been, like, hilarious just because I love, like, the trash talk on Twitter, too. And like, calling out Bjergsen and then, like, calling out Fudge and saying he's, like, an auto-filled mid laner and all this stuff. I love all that because you don't really see a ton of that in esports, I feel like, compared to regular sports. And so it's been kind of funny just, like, watching the banter and, like, it almost feels like he has Conor McGregor vibes, like, as a rookie. So it's it makes it fun to watch.
Well, it reminds me of, like, Doublelift, right? Like, Doublelift in his early days, like, he would call everyone trash. Like, he was almost borderline toxic.
Yeah,
but at the same time, like, that toxicity wrote some really fun narratives, right? And, like, LCS needs more of those. So, like, I think, like, JoJo's playing it correct. Like, that's a good way to build a brand around yourself. Like, just the one guy who's not going to sit there and be super nice to everybody. Like, come in and, like, you know, kind of call people out and, like, you know, especially if you can back it up with your skill, like, that's pretty good, you know?
Yeah, no, I agree 100%. And that was actually one of the questions I was going to ask you is, like, how do you, what are your current thoughts on this LCS season compared to, like, the last couple previous seasons? Because personally, I feel like this season's been way more exciting to watch just because of, like, this, like, Bjergsen coming back and some of the NAEU changes and, like, the imports, and then you got, like, this rookie talking trash, and you got, you know, Danny, the rookie of the year, signing with EG. Like, I don't know. I felt like there were some big moves that makes this season way more interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think it's one of the more interesting seasons there's been in a while, but I also attribute that a lot to the coaching. Like, there's so many different coaches with different ideas, and, like, they run, like, they're, like, willing to try to run the wacky comps, right? Like, the Smite Janna top and, like, you know, even, like,
LS with
this Baraka mid or Ivern mid. Yeah, like, I think that's cool. It's about time, like, people started getting creative. Because, like, I always felt like that was one of my biggest critiques for pro play, is I felt like people were so unwilling to try new things that they would just, like, play standard and lose. And, like, I, like, obviously, like, as a player coming from, like, where I did, like, even with my initial story of, like, being silver players getting third, like, if you don't think you're going to win the head-to-head, why not do something weird, right? Yeah. Like, at least, like, do something, you know? I don't understand why you just want to roll over and just, like, lose, you know?
True, true. That's
cool.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think it's good for the LCS because if you look at, like, viewership numbers, just this week alone with, like, those crazy comps from C9, the viewership went up from, like, it went up, like, 50 to 80,000 people, like, more on top of it. So it was cool to see that.
Yeah.
I was wondering, what is like a day in the life of a coach look like for you?
Like, it's different between collegiate and like pro or whatever. Like, I guess amateur is what I like most, like head coach in the most. Mm-hmm. So like amateur is rough. It is like, it is honestly like a full grind. Like, I didn't stay in amateur that too terribly long because it's honestly miserable. And I have so much respect for the coaches that like really stick it out and like actively try to like get into pro. But like the limited amount of opportunities presented to you is just like incredible. Like, you just like, you rarely are gonna like have anyone give you a shot at anything. Yeah. And like typically it's like almost like a social climb sort of deal where like you have to know people and then players have to like you to like get you your foot in the door to different things, you know what I'm saying? Like, there has to be a lot of connections to bridge you into some form of like LCS affiliated org or something like that. It's a huge grind. And like honestly, like so basically you're typically going to be working with an org that is underfunded, and while doing that you're going to be working essentially full time. Like when I was working with Revival, I was like on my computer all day, like every day. Like I was constantly watching VODs all the way into scrim, setting game plans for the scrims or matches, watching the matches, going over the matches afterwards, rinse and repeat. Like that's your whole day. Like, and it's like, it gets like almost grueling. Like it gets exhausting. Like it's fun and it's really satisfying, like when you're like doing well and stuff, but it is really hard, especially if you know that like you probably have to do this another 3 or 4 years before you maybe get an opportunity to do anything. Right. Like,
yeah.
On the collegiate side, like obviously my roles aren't just to be a coach. I do coach our league team, just because I want to help them get better, and I obviously have the resources to do so. And collegiate's a lot more fun because it's super random. You don't have to like put a ton of like thought into it. Like I don't have to grind watching like VODs of like 100 Thieves Next, yeah, you know, or something like that, and like look for every detail of what they do. In collegiate, everyone like is, you know, the skill range is all over the place, so like you're not learning much from VODs because there's no like consistent gameplay. It's just more about like what's the best game plan I can make for these players.
Yeah,
you know, and like it's just a lot more fun and a lot less time consuming. That's part of the reason.
Stressful.
Oh yeah, absolutely less stressful. Like, you know, I mean, right now our team is like gold plat average.
Uh-huh.
And like, so like, and they all are like a really great group of guys. Like one of the things I established at the beginning is like, I don't want any egos, or like, we're all here to get better. I don't want like, just cause someone hits D4 or something, I don't want them thinking like, oh, I'm insane, I'm way better than you. And like, you know, acting like that. I was like, we're all here to support each other in our growth. We're all bad. And that's what we need to keep that mentality at, and just like work towards improving, and we'll get way further than anyone else if we do that, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So like all the guys that I've been working with have like adopted that mindset, and they've been like so great. Like they've been learning so quick. Like it's crazy. Like, and it's really satisfying to watch, because like at like super like high elo coaching, right, like you're modifying a player and you can see significant change depending on the player, but a lot of these players are playing relatively well on a game, you know, there's like minimal, like minor changes you tweak to their play to like help them like get to that next level, right? Because mm-hmm. they're already so like good. But like at collegiate level, like there's a million things that these guys can work on, and then like you really get to see that huge change in growth from like starting to now. Like it's been crazy with our players. Like I've been working with them for like a couple months now, and like the difference in their play is just insane.
That's super cool. I bet that's like so much fun to watch. And then like, oh, when you yeah. look back, you know, like you said, 3 months, it's got to be so mm-hmm. cool to just be, especially like at the individual level, just to be like, man, here's like 5 things that this player was doing that now like he is replaced with positive things and is able to like compete on a different level.
Yeah, I mean, even in our like, we, one of our more recent matches, we played Sacramento State, mm-hmm. and their whole team is like D1 to like masters average in rank.
Yeah.
And our team is like gold plat, right? Mm-hmm. So I told him, I was like, guys, we're probably not going to win this one, but if we're going to, we're not playing standard. Like we have to cheese, right? So like our first game, like there's a VOD of it. It was incredible. We ran like the 2v1 like Sion lane swap, where like Sion like counters your own jungle and you invade mm-hmm. their top side and yeah. split map. You deny their jungler a camp, and then you like have your bot lane play 2v1 top and you just dive their top over and over.
Yeah.
And they executed that so cleanly for a bunch of plat players. Like, I was so impressed because, like, we actually had a gold lead. Like, it was a winnable game. Like, naturally, we lost over time. Like, obviously, they have, like, the better players. So mm-hmm. it wasn't, like, an easy win. But, like, we did that and we, like, the games were close. Like, and I would never expect a game with that elo difference to be close, right?
Yeah.
And then, like, in our second game, we ran the Smite Janna top, and, like, same thing. Like, it was close, and, like, we actually put up a fight, and I was like, this is really fun to watch, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's really enjoyable to root for the underdog.
Yeah, and you can probably go back and watch those games and learn so much from them to be like,
oh, absolutely.
This is where we had our lead, and then, like, this was the decision where we, like, started slowly blowing it or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool.
Absolutely.
So... like, just talking about coaching and, like, working with players, what do you think is, like, the most important thing for you to do as a coach? Because, like, you know, you see some of, like, the more famous coaches out there. Like, what comes to my mind is Yamato Cannon for Fnatic. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, I was listening to his podcast one time, and he was saying that, like, the most important thing for him is to create the best environment that he can for his players, for them to be able to compete at their best. And then you mm-hmm. hear maybe some other coaches, like in my head, I think LS, where he's maybe more about understanding the meta and like the draft more so than mm-hmm. like the environment of the players. So like, what do you think for you is the most important thing as a coach to like help your players win games and compete?
I mean, it depends on the level of play, right? So again, like if you're playing at like high elo, like with like, you know, working with high elo players, I think like the most important thing you can do is facilitate healthy discussion. And honestly, like sometimes you just need someone to kind of be a leader in the sense of like those games, because it's like these guys are like competing for careers basically, right? Mm-hmm. Like they want it really bad. When things go wrong or something, the conversations can get heated. Players can get really angry with one another. And having someone there to kind of like, you know, move someone out of Discord for 5 minutes or something, you know, like calm them down, like, you know, and like structure a healthy discussion that's productive versus like super angry or heated, to make sure they maintain like a good team mentality. I think that's like one of the key things. I also believe that draft plays a huge role in it. I think if like your players are good and you can like outdraft the enemy team, you can just win games through draft, which yeah. So like in that regard, that's absolutely correct. But yeah, I do. It's like probably a mixture of both in terms of like healthy environment, I think is key. Cause like, and then also like, I always, like I said, I try to maintain the idea of like, I don't like to work with super egotistical players. You know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? Like I want players that maintain the idea that like, they're just here to improve, because at the end of the day, that's going to be more enjoyable for the whole team to work with. And that also facilitates like way more healthy discussion than if you have someone be like, no, you guys suck. Like, oh, you guys need to get better. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
It doesn't do anyone any good. So, and I think that's what like sets up that healthy team environment or like a positive environment.
Okay, cool. Do you think do you know what performance psychology is, or like just like a basic understanding of it?
Like, is it like what what's his name from TSM did? He was like the coach. He was like the sports psychologist that kind of like started coaching League. I can't remember his name for some reason.
I'm not sure. I'll have to look it up, because to be honest, I don't have like any real connections in professional like League of Legends. And so to me, I was thinking, you know, basically it's like as players, we train our body and we train like our mechanical skills or our decision-making in the game. But we don't really ever train like our mental, and not mm-hmm. in the sense of like, I guess it kind of is in the sense of like not getting tilted, but also just like making confident decisions, believing in yourself. How does your mind react when something negative happens? Like, are you immediately getting down or believing that the game's unwinnable? Or does your mind immediately go to like ways to solve the problem and like what's the next step to win? So it's kind of, that's kind of what performance psychology is to me. And I wanted to know, like, one, if you had seen any like performance psychologists in the League of Legends scene or like the professional scene. And then two, if you think something like that could have a place.
Yeah, I mean, so all I could think of is the guy from, like, he was, like, on CLG and TSM. I can't remember his name, but he was, like, a sword psychologist who kind of implemented some things. As far as I know from, like, some of the players that, like, had worked with him, they said, like, some of the things he would make them do, they didn't really want to do. They just did it anyway. Just to, like, appease him or whatever. So, like, I think there's room for some of it. Like, one of the things that, like, I think there absolutely is psychology in, like, active in the games. Like, an example I can give is, like, just the other night we were having scrims with our Weaver team, and our support was playing Blitzcrank, and he missed a few hooks, and the team started reacting negatively to it. They're like, oh, like, we gotta start landing those, you know what I'm saying, like, putting pressure on him. And, like, after the game, I kind of told the team, I was like, listen, guys, like, I don't care if he lands or hits the hook. The issue is if you guys are giving him negative reinforcement for missing them, then he's like, then I'm like, even like, I like, I'm like a very good Blitzcrank player. That's probably one of my best champions that I play. Yeah. Right. Like, I was like, I said, if I'm in this game, I'm not landing hooks either. Because, like, if your team is, like, setting that tone for you and saying, like flaming you every time you miss a hook, like, you feel pressured and you feel nervous, and then you're going to be way more prone to messing up in the future versus, like, if that you guys just, like, kind of, like, you know, shrug it off and then celebrate the ones that do land, right? Like, hype your teammate up on, like, that's the opposite way. And it's, like, it's definitely proven that that works, right? Like, positive reinforcement is way better than negative reinforcement, right?
Yeah.
That's, like, basic psychology. So, like, that's one thing. And then also just, like, making sure, like, you're setting a tone for, like, there should be no passive aggressive. And, like, even like you said, with, like, always trying to keep a proactive mentality. That's something I teach my players all the time is, like, we don't think about what we did wrong. We don't even discuss it in game. It's, like, not even something you think about. It's like, what's next? What's the next step? What's our next goal? What's our next objective? How are we getting it? Right? Like, that's the only questions I want them to be asking compared to, like, oh man, like, we really should have played that differently, like, in the middle of a match, right? Like, they need to, like, be focused on how they win regardless of what the situation is and not thinking about, like, why things went wrong.
Yeah, that's true. You know, it makes me think, like, you talk about these things, and, like, as a coach, I feel like it's easy to bring that up and, like, make a correction to the team and be like, hey, we shouldn't be talking to him like that. We should be talking to him like this instead. But it also makes me think, like, you know, what was these players' mental state? Like, okay, he misses a hook. Is it like, all right, the team fight's lost? Or is it, okay, what's the cooldown? How many seconds do we need to delay this until we get another chance? And then, you know, the other part of it that I think about is, let's say you have a player who, or I guess just like all the players on the team, like, how often are we teaching them or, like, reinforcing in them these mindsets so that in the moment in the game, they can catch themselves and be like, I shouldn't be thinking like that. I should be doing blank. Because to me, that's like, at least in my own personal games, when something goes wrong, like, you know, the bot lane's feeding or the team gets a massive shutdown or whatever it is, they steal an objective from us. I catch myself just shutting down and being like, well, that's the game. Like, GG, FF.
Yeah,
but I have to, like, correct myself and be like, no. Like, there's things we can do to still win this. We need to, like, always be competing here. And so, but I just feel like that's something that's not really it's forgotten in a lot of sports. And it's actually interesting because I recently learned that the Major League Baseball, the NBA, the NFL, and the NHL have all mandated that every team has to have a performance psychologist. One, to make sure players, like, mental health is okay, which I think could also be big in esports. Absolutely. But two, to make sure that players are training not just their physical skills and, like, building their body, but that they're training their mind. Because really, if you think about it, and I talk about this in my previous episode, but, like, those are the only three things you can train: your body, your craft, and your mind. And your craft is League. Your body, to me, would be, like, your mechanical skills, your ability to pull off combos. And then your mind is, like, this aspect that maybe isn't touched on as much.
Yeah. No, I mean, I literally, like, I make the team do push-ups before their matches. Like, because I think it's important to, like, you know, get like, the blood pumping, get, like, yeah. you know, I just know that, like, when I was in high school, which feels like a really long time ago now, but, like, when I was in high school, I had, like, a gym class at the start of, like, my day, right? It was, like, first class of the day was gym every day. And, like, it was, like, one of the craziest semesters I've ever had because, like, my grades were, like, way better than they ever had been. And it was because, like, you know, getting up and, like, doing some exercise and stuff really does help you in terms of, like, thinking and all that stuff, like, in your focus. And so, like, when it comes to, like, our matches, I definitely have our players, like, do at least, like, I just, like, say, like, do 20 push-ups or something. You know what I'm saying? Like, just do a few push-ups, get something going. That way, like, you can be more awake and aware. And I definitely think it helps them a lot.
Yeah, yeah. It's funny that you say that because literally if I have a bad game, whether it was me feeding or the team, we just lose and I'm like frustrated. I stop. I do push-ups. I get out of my chair. I do some push-ups. I shake it off. I'm like, all right, like new game. Let's go.
Yeah, that's a good way to go about it, honestly.
Well, okay. So I have one more question to ask you before I let you go. And it's kind of in terms of that with like climbing and just playing league because majority of the people who listen to this podcast aren't professional players. They're just the average player, probably a silver, gold player who's been playing forever and is like hard stuck. What do you think is the number one thing someone can do to climb in the 2022 season?
Okay. I mean, I think this goes for every season. Like the biggest thing any player can do is you need to like, stop thinking you're good and deserve to be somewhere else. Like, honestly, like that, like having some sense of entitlement that like, oh, I deserve to be gold, right? If like I'm silver, but I should be gold. I just get trolled or something. Like, you got to drop that mentality immediately, right? Like, the biggest thing you can do is accept that you are bad at the game, no matter what Elo you're at. Like, literally even challenger players, like accept that you are bad at the game. And that there's always something to improve on. Like, I've been like taking part in this game, like as a coach and as a player for like, over like, I don't even know, like 8-9 years now, you know what I'm saying? And like, I can honestly tell you, like, I'm still learning things about the game, right? It's such a complex game. So like, as soon as you accept that you have room to improve and you humble yourself up and you start actually analyzing your own play or even like getting coaching sessions from like coaches and stuff, like those things are what's going to help you improve the most. As soon as you just kind of like eat a slice of humble pie and be like, all right, like, what can I do to get better? And as soon as you're focused on improving, like more so than climbing, then the climbing will come naturally, right? Like that's something like every player, like even I growing up, like going through like when I was playing in collegiate, I would get coaching sessions from players all the time or coaches. And I would just like listen to what they'd say. And they all kind of kept that same advice, which is like, you just need to focus on improving and then you will see Elo naturally.
Yeah.
Right. Because over time, if you like, strictly just become the best player, like even if you get like 1% better like every day, like eventually you'll become a good enough player where you should have no problem climbing, right? If you get to a point where you're not climbing, like that's when you need to know, like, okay, I need to reassess my play. I need to like have someone else take a look at it, or I need to like start watching my own VODs, right? And then when you start taking those steps, that's how you climb. But to do that, you have to actually genuinely want to improve, right? Like if you just want to play and have fun, then don't get upset when you're in silver, right? Like just accept what you got. But if you want to improve, then take the steps to do it. And that can include, like, you know, don't focus so much on all the things you're doing right. Focus exclusively on the things that you did wrong. Like even in games where your top laner goes 0-40, you know, there's still things you could have maybe done to influence like a difference in that game. Like, and even if it doesn't result in a win, like it could be a difference in your play, right? Yeah. And that can mean the next game is a win, you know? So I think that's the most important fact.
Okay. I like that a lot. It makes me think of in the military, we talk about how like the second you lower your guard or you think that, you know, you're done or that you're safe is the moment when things go bad. And so like, you always have to have that mindset of like, how can I improve the security? How can I better myself? How can I better our position? Because it's like that moment that you're like, okay, we're home free. That's usually when stuff happens. So it's pretty much the same thing you're saying. It's like, you just got to humble yourself and always be looking for ways to improve. And I definitely needed to hear that, because I'm not going to lie, I've had the mindset for like a year. It's like, man, I'm like, I've learned so much about this game. I've gotten so much better as a player. Like, why am I still in this rank? But maybe it's just like, well, it's because you deserve it.
Yeah, I mean, that's really the biggest thing. Like, there's always so much a player can improve on. Like, and like, you'd be surprised. Like, I've done coaching sessions with players of all kinds of ELOs, and even high ELO players. Like, I'll break something down for them, and they'll be like, oh, I never even, like, considered this, right? Like, I've never even thought about the game in this way. Like, I wasn't thinking about my matchup or how to build my runes for it. Stuff like that, right? You'd be surprised how much, like, little bits of extra effort you put in make such a big difference in your gameplay.
Okay, cool. No, I like that. All right, man. Hey, well, thanks for taking your time to come and talk to me, dude. It means a lot. You're the first interview I've done.
Absolutely.
I really enjoyed everything that you were saying. And just so everyone knows, I'm going to be linking all of Tyler's information in the little description of this episode. So I'll be linking his socials. I'll be giving you guys a link if you guys want to use him for coaching. So it'll all be there in the description. Any last things you want to say before we close out?
Nah, I think I'm good.
All right, cool. Sounds good, man. Thank you.